Assalamu alaikum and welcome to a new episode from Anas Talks. I know it's been a while and maybe you might notice that the voice or the sound is a bit different. Now I'm recording from my phone. It was itching my mind to actually record this episode, and I just parked at the destination that I was heading to and I decided to record it through my phone. Unfortunately, I'm not in my home studio to record, but I really hope that the sound will be crisp and clear for you. Without further ado, let's start the episode. This episode will be a bit different. I'm gonna be telling you a story, then I will be mentioning the wisdom out of it, or the wisdom that I have seen out of it. And I'll be sharing my thoughts after it. And by the end of this, I'm going to be saying the topic of the episode, or what's the name of the episode. So the story that I want to share is the story of Prophet Muhammad. Now, by all means, this is not a religious show. I am not trying to preach or spread any ideas per se, since we agreed that the topic or the topics of this podcast will be about business. But bear with me until the end and you'll be able to see the wisdom of it, or the wisdom behind it. This is not scripted. I did not write notes. I have a couple of points in my mind, so be patient with me. So the story of the Prophet goes like this. His father passed away when he was still not born. Then his mom died and he was at a young age, maybe 6 years old approximately. Then he had a rough childhood. I mean, being raised in the 700s with no family, no parents, his grandfather took care of him. And there are so much details to the story that I can't really just mention, but I'm just trying to highlight a couple of things. He used to spend time alone, where he used to go to the mountain to meditate, to think about the universe, to think about the creator, to think about life, about mankind, so on and so forth. Until he turned 40, where he was received by a messenger of God, and he was told that he's the prophet, and the story goes from there. Now, when he started telling people at that time, where they were worshipping stone, worshipping, can't remember the word in English, but statues, yes. They're worshipping statues made out of stone, marble, sometimes made out of food. So whenever he used to ask them, why are you doing so and so, they would say, that's what we found our previous generations were doing this, so we're just following the tradition. And of course, the story goes for 23 years telling people about worshipping the one God, and that you need to be doing good to mankind and doing good to humanity. 1 year or two into his after the message was sent to him, his uncle passed away, and his wife, so the two main supporters in his life at that time, were just passed away, and he was all left alone. Now think of this, where you're bringing a brand new idea, not only to your family or to your surroundings, but more or less to the whole of society. And this idea goes against everything they have seen, everything they have believed, everything they have ever thought of. And you're just simply saying, listen, whatever you know is wrong, and this is what's right, and you need to believe me. Now, he had many aids, of course, the aids of the Holy Quran, which is the holy book, which at that time it was sent as a miracle until our days. But why am I saying this? At that time, the power of people was in literature, or the Arabic language, and how deep and powerful the words can be. And even the most powerful people in the language, they were like, this is not being said by humans. It just simply can't be. So this is one of the miracles. He had many, not to dig deep into that part of the story. He started to have believers, and he had so many enemies until the day that he has died. Even the moment that he passed away, his disbelievers also increased the numbers. Even after all what they have seen from physical miracles, from all the signs, from everything, yet their mind have disbelieved it. They just simply couldn't accept it. Now, the moral of the story is that the following, I'm going to be just putting them into bullet points to arrange them. Point number one is that you being right does not always mean that you will be accepted. To give you an example, you'd be in school or you'd be in uni and you would be challenging your professor in something they have said wrong. And their automatic first reaction, 99% of the time, they would be like, listen, I'm the one teaching you, not the other way around. You need to listen to me. Just because their mind or their belief does not have the capacity to understand and accept that, hey, I might be wrong. There might be something new. There might be a new discovery or a new angle to this topic. So that's point number one. Point number two, and I think this goes on a deep philosophical level, that in order for you to be strong, you need to be beaten down. Now, what do I mean by this? As humans, we always rely on things. So I would say from personal experience, growing up, I always used to rely on something. So when I was a kid, all of us were kids, we always used to rely on the approval of our parents. So you would notice that the kids, if you have kids or you have a niece or a nephew or a relative who has kids, you would notice that the kid will always try to grab the attention of their parents, regardless how stupid or small the thing is. They just want the approval. So they would be shouting, "Mommy, mommy, look at me. I'm so strong, I can lift my own car." Now, it's irrelevant, and the kid does not really need anything besides the approval of his parents. He needs the attention. And the parents, on the other hand, will be able to give them this attention and be able to exaggerate their feelings and the way that they talk and they express, and they would say, "Wow, you're such a strong boy," or "such a powerful girl," just for them to feed them. To feed them that attention so they can move forward and they can feel secure that they are getting this sort of approval since they rely on it. Now, they would grow in age and they would start getting good marks in school, at elementary or prep school, and the difficulty would go higher and then the reward would get bigger, etc., etc. You get where I'm going with this. But then you get to a point where you would finish your degree, whether it was high school, graduate, postgraduate, or PhD. You are no longer in a curriculum where you would need to study certain material, be examined in it, and be given a mark. You would be joining the real world where things are not so systematic. Things are not in a curriculum. More or less, when you go to work, you are expected to do things, but you would be facing different things on a daily basis. You would get to discover that the things that were taught in school does not really apply in real life. Where in school you get asked a question, and if you answer this question correctly, you get a mark. And when you work in the real world, if you do something very well, it might be a threat to the person above you, and it might have a negative effect. So you would be going into these dilemmas of things, and you would be starting to learn from it. I know I've went deep into explaining this, but I'm just relating it to the same point. You need to be beaten down to your knees, or to a point where you would be disbelieving, or you would be doubting yourself. Let's say in a business perspective or in a work environment, that you would be you'd stop listening to yourself. You would stop listening to all the idiots around you, or even the good people who are giving you advice, and be like, listen, I am good. I am working for myself. I'm putting the extra effort for me to learn more and grow. Me being in the wrong environment does not make me a bad person, or I'm wrong in my decision. So that's point number one. Point number two, The fact that his family have died, his mom and dad have died at a very young age, that he has no siblings, that even his the grandfather passed away, his uncle passed away, his wife passed away, all the people who are supporting him passed away, taught him a very, very big lesson that in order for you to be strong, you need to rely on yourself. You need to be yourself, need to be strong. Now, me as a younger sibling in my family, I can understand this more because when I grew up, there's a good difference between me and my elder brothers. So whenever I used to get in trouble or whenever I needed advice, there was always that person that I can go back to, besides my father, who I have a less of a age gap like between me and my dad, and he would understand me more. And since he's my brother, like we're both guys, we'd understand each other. It would be an easier relationship than if it was with my elder sister. So you get what I'm saying here, that when I'll be talking to my brother, he'll be able to give me the support if I'm in trouble or if I'm in a dilemma or something. But I would try to put myself in my eldest brother's shoes, where everything was new for him, everything was a new experiment, even for my own mom and dad. So always the first kid is, well, as they say, the kid that they always experiment with, and not in a bad way, but they're new to the parenting world, so they try everything until they get the hang of it. And this is natural in all families. You would always notice the first child and the last child, they're total opposites. The first one would be so strict in general, the last one would be the most chilled. The one in the middle is literally in the middle, where he's in the middle ground of between both worlds. So the point that I'm trying to deliver here is that he had to be alone. He needed to learn to be on his own, to rely on his own, so he would be strong, so that if in any situation he would be put in, he would be able to move forward. Point number three would be understanding the value of things. And what I'm trying to say with this is that when we were growing up, we had a childhood best friend who we have spent lots of time with. We visited their house a lot. They came to our house a lot, especially if we were living in the same neighborhood. I grew up in the 90s, so that was the norm back then. There was no social media, there was no video games as much as it is now. It was the beginning of it. So even when I would be at his place or he'd be at my place, it would be natural for us kids to call each other's families, family members, like mom and dad. I'd call his mom as mom, like, or something like that. So when you grow up in that environment, you would be like, yeah, this person basically became my brother, although we're not blood related, and we're just going to grow up together, and we will probably at a later point in life we will keep in touch, we might do business together or whatever the scenario would be in your head. And you would come to discover that, as an example, if at grade 6 or grade 9 or whatever, at some point in life where you would change schools, slowly the conversations would be shorter, the phone calls would be less, you'll be seeing each other less, until slowly that relationship would fade away. And I'm talking of experience, and I think almost all of us have been through such experiences. By the time you graduate from high school, and speaking about myself, when I entered university, I almost had no friends type of thing, from like who were with me from school and stayed with me in uni. So we kept in touch after the graduation of high school by like a month max or two. And simply once university started, everybody got busy. Some people traveled, some people stayed in the country. And I started making new friends. So in university, I had a huge group of friends. We used to be over 20 people. We used to chill on a daily basis, especially at the beginning, we had the same classes. And again, Although that mold in your head was broken or cracked, I would say, not broken yet, you'll be giving yourself excuses. You will say, yeah, we were younger before, so it didn't really work that we would be growing up together, we would be sticking together. Now we're adults, now we're in the real world, in the university, our bonds will be stronger. Little did I know, even sometimes during the university, before even the graduation, once everybody started working and started getting busy, the conversations, the same pattern again, the conversations started slowing down, we started seeing each other less. By the time I graduated from my university, from all the people who I used to chill with, I had one friend. Actually, from school and the university, when I graduated, I had only and have until now only one friend. I don't call him as a friend anymore. I call him as a brother. We've known each other for now more than a decade, and we shared lots of memories. But what I'm trying to say is, by the time I graduated the university, that was the moment where that statue or that mold has been broken and shattered in my head, where I'll be like, listen, nothing is going to last forever. Everything is meant to finish. You don't rely on one thing to feed you, whether it was your parents' approvals or whether you're looking for a significant other or you're trying to find the best friend who can be always there for you. It can be he or she can be in the same age group as you. You might share the same hobbies. You would always have that in the back of your head that, hey, you know what? The world is good because that person is good and that person is my best friend, or he's around me or in my circle. And it hurts. It really hurts on a personal level that they might leave. Not even in a bad way or on bad terms, but that person might get married. That person might immigrate. That person might just simply get busy in his life, or I would even get busy in my life and I wouldn't be able to meet this person anymore or be able to be present anymore as much as before. It's part of life. This is the normal way for life to proceed forward to the next step. Now, mentioning all those three points, the last point, which is the materialistic things, and I would say this is the most difficult because this is the thing that we experience on a daily basis. So, as an example, I have experienced the good side of it and the bad side of it. The good side of it is that when I got employed and I was able to move to another job which paid me a higher pay, and I was able to see that the way that I dress got better, the way that I support my family got better. And then when I got the second promotion after it, where I was able to really contribute very well in the house and be able like to take my parents out, be able to show them new places, be able to travel. The bad side of it was after this upturn, there was a downhill where I lost my job. And when I was able to find another job, it was almost 55 or 60% of my previous pay. So it was a huge cut where my lifestyle had to change immediately. I had to cope up with the new income, the lower income. The liabilities are the same, the bills are still the same, but now I had a lower income. I had to fix my life accordingly. And thank God it was difficult, and that's why I'm thanking God that I have learned how to cope up in these situations. I would say I wouldn't have learned if it was just a smooth ride of me moving from one job to the other and it was an automatic raise or an automatic upgrade of 10 to 15% in my pay, which sounds like the normal life type of thing. But in the real world, you might be hit with things that are out of your power. So, as an example, if the industry you're in does really bad on a global level or even on a local level, or the company you're in needs to move its offices. One small example on the side, since we're just to be in the business realm, the company Adobe, obviously known, the international company, decided that they will go cloud-based. That means 98% of their manpower had to be let go in an instant, like not only from the USA offices, I'm talking about the whole world, the globe, all the offices around the globe for Adobe had to be laid off because simply they are no longer how to say it, they are no longer traditional software. So they became a cloud-based solution. And they were like, listen, we don't need 98% of the manpower. Thank you for everybody who worked with us. Here's your compensations. We gave you a heads up of a couple of months. But this is, again, this is something that's out of your hands, which was a good thing for the company, but it wasn't a good thing for the personnel who were working in Adobe, or the majority of them. I'm not trying to shame Adobe. I'm just saying that it is possible to be happening in the industry. Moving on to the second segment of my podcast, which is the lessons learned. Mentioning all the previous 4 points, now that my life have changed almost, we're coming to an end for 2018. It was one of the most biggest turning points in my life. I would thank God and say it was positive, with all its bitterness, with all its challenges. But I would say if you want to reap a very big reward, you need to work extra hard for it. The disbelief would come to you in different shapes, different forms on a daily basis. Life challenges would hit you from places that you never thought it would. And it all depends how hard can you hit back, or how much tenacity you have in you to be able to keep on moving forward while all the circumstances around you are 100% against you. This is not a pep talk. I am by no means like to be the person who gives motivational type of charges for the people who would listen to me or meet me in person. The reason why I don't believe in motivation, the concept of it, of what the media portrays, is, in my opinion, extremely difficult. Extremely wrong. Not difficult, it's extremely wrong, because the way that they portray it, that one person was feeling down, they listened to some sort of a speech and it triggered something in them and they have achieved greatness. Not at all. Achieving greatness goes with misery 99.9% of the way. And you might get to 99.9% of the way and you might fail. That's number one. That's a possibility. Point number two, that when you succeed, the people will not see the 99% that you have given. They will just see the last step and you'll be like, wow, look at that guy. He made it. Well, yeah, but you need to take into account all the misery that that person have been through. That being said, I've learned so many things in 2018. The fact that I had a huge shift in my life, in terms of my career, in terms of even like, that was such a huge thing that it had the biggest effect was on me personally, my personality, my thinking, my ideas, and the way that I look at the world. It had also positive effects on many parts of my life that has to do with the things that matter the most to me, which is my family and my relationship with my family. Not that it was bad, but it just got better. At the same time, so many sacrifices had to be done. And I knew what I was signing up for. So I knew that my social life will be hit very hard. My hobbies, such as doing my YouTube vlogs, the videos I used to do on the side, social media. And I know social media, I've been off social media now for close to 2 months or 2 months and a half. And I'm going to be doing another episode for that. This is not my topic today. But the wisdom that I would get from the story of the prophet, or the story of our day and age, of people who have had to sacrifice. One small thing we were discussing, me and my brother, that we were talking about Apple and Steve Jobs, and that Steve Jobs, although he was one of the people who created, or was one of the pillars in creating Apple, he was kicked out from Apple for 10 years. And I would say, and this is what my brother also agrees with me, or I actually agree with him since it was his idea, just to give the credit to the right people, where he said, If Steve Jobs did not leave and Apple did not face bankruptcy and it was collapsing, if it did not go through this hardship, Apple would have never been what is Apple today, which is a company exceeding $1 trillion in value or in its dominance in market share or the culture that it has created. It would have been just another computer company on the shelf. So it had to go through that very harsh environment, very tough days and tough years. Thinking of it, it's just like diamond, where it has to be burnt to extreme high temperatures and excruciating pressure, that it would be able to change its atoms from the inside, from the deepest level and the most smallest molecules of its creation, to change from being carbon to being diamonds. I hope I was able to deliver the idea that I wanted to share with you here, or to share with you the wisdom. As I said before, the title of this podcast is what I'm going to call patience. Patience is the most difficult thing, me personally speaking, going through in my life. And I noticed that it was common amongst all people, especially with our lives getting faster and faster. We're driving faster cars, getting in faster airplanes. The amount of information that we get on a daily basis is much more faster. So the pace of our life is so fast that even if we face a normal thing, we feel like we slowed down at such a high rate that we can't tolerate it. So I'll give you an example. Today I went to the dentist, and I hope I don't sound weird because I left like an hour ago. So when I was waiting in the waiting room, I was watching Netflix on my phone. And that would have never happened back in the days. Like, I remember when my dad, he was a dentist, and I used to chill in the waiting room. He used to have like a couple of newspapers and magazines. We didn't install a television until like later on because it was not really needed. When you're going to the doctor, you can just read the newspaper. It's all right. Nowadays, there was a TV on with a cable, and the movie was still playing, and yet I still had my phone, I had my Netflix on. What I'm trying to say here is that the pace of life became so fast, and patience is almost non-existent in our life, especially in the thing that I'm trying to do today, starting a new business. Or not necessarily new per se in the English term, but anything under 15 years is considered new business in the economic world. But bringing new ideas to the table, being able to shift the way that I think and the way that I execute things, despite sharing any of the problems of my circumstances that I'm going through. I wouldn't call them problems, I would call them challenges. So it's different from one person to the other. The person who doesn't have money thinks that, you know what, money will solve all my problems. And the person who has money goes like, I have the money, but it's not really solving my problem. Or it goes on from there. Patience. Patience is the key to everything. You need to try to have it. You need to tell yourself, train yourself, meditate, and be like, and this is a message firstly directed to me and then to everybody listening to this podcast, that patience is the key, whether you're an employee, whether you're a newlywed that who's waiting to have a kid, whether you're a family and you have a kid and you're waiting for this kid to grow up, or God forbid, going through tough times that this kid has a fever or sick and you're waiting for them to get well. All of these circumstances, patience is always the key. It is crucial to have it. And whenever you feel beaten down, whenever you would feel that life is getting tough, think about it, try to analyze it, try to get out of it. But always remember that in order for you to be strong, you need to be broken. I will end it with a sentence. It had such a huge impact on me, even on a personal level that in order for you to get strong, you need to be broken first. And also another thing that I heard, it says when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. I'm not sure if it's correct in English. It just made sense. I really hope it made sense for you. You've been listening to Anas Podcast. I'm your host, Anas Shatara. I really hope you enjoyed this podcast. And I'll be hopefully posting soon. Peace.